Let's bring in Tim Hasselbeck because we're ready to talk NFL with him. He joins us every week on the program, and he's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, hour number three. Our show is presented by Creation CBD, products curated for life. Tim, this was not a good week for the top dogs in the NFL. A lot of bad losses. What did you make of Upset City in the NFL last week?
Thought it was really surprising. I think some more than others. And then I think some of the ones that maybe wasn't necessarily surprised, like who won the game. I was surprised at how and by how much. So like surprising to see, you know, Denver beat Dallas. Certainly surprising to see Jacksonville beat Buffalo. But then also like, look, I probably would have thought maybe, you know, the Browns had a chance to win or maybe should win that football game. But, like, to run Cincinnati off the field like they did, I can't say I saw that coming. And, you know, what do you make of it? I think what you make of it is that, you know, it's pro football. And, you know, in pro football, I mean, I don't think – look, we're going to – I'm assuming at some point we're going to talk about how amazing the Titans are. And – you know, if you do that, you also have to be like, oh, by the way, like, they did lose to that Jets team that just gave up 45 to the Colts. But that's pro football.
Remember about a month ago when I asked you if the conference had caught up to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs?
Mm-hmm.
Has the AFC caught up to Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs? Because their offense, their defense is bad. We know that, but their offense, there's something not right, Tim. And it hasn't changed. It's looked the same all year, basically.
I actually thought it looked different Sunday night.
Really?
Think about how many passes do you think Patrick Mahomes completed outside the pocket on Sunday night?
Outside the pocket?
Yeah, how many – like we will all agree, Patrick Mahomes is great at creating offense, right?
Sure.
We agree?
Yep.
And think about how many of his big plays come when he's where?
Outside the pocket.
Okay. How many completions outside the pocket on Sunday night for Mahomes?
Since you're asking, it's going to be terribly low. I'm going to say three.
Okay. He completed one. And you know when it was?
No.
The very last drive of the game. Remember the play to seal it?
Yep.
You're still awake?
Yep.
The only pass that he completed outside the pocket. Now, I would say this. I believe that he has been coached now, like through all the interceptions, of, hey, let's dial the volume down here a little bit. Like, let's bring it in tight. Let's play inside the structure. Once we get rolling again, like, then we can start to create. He only attempted three passes outside the pocket the entire game, and one of them was on a designed roll left on a third and two that Mecole Hardman dropped. So I believe that they're like, I think the offense looked different. What I'm trying to say is that I think it looked different in that I think they asked him on Sunday night to not turn the football over, play inside the structure of the offense, and, like, get us back to a baseline before we start to create again. And truthfully, they're going to win more games than they lose if they just do that.
Really? Okay. Still, they won, but not impressive. If Aaron Rodgers, in my opinion, you can push back. If Aaron Rodgers plays that game, they lose by two touchdowns.
Yeah. Now, again, I would agree with you, but Aaron wasn't playing, and Jordan Love really struggled. And so, you know, I think you've got to play the game, you know, in some ways based on who you're playing. So – I think that it's, I mean, don't you think that's the case? It's one of the reasons, like, watching that Chargers game, like, at times, like the Chargers-Eagles, it's like, why are you going for it here? Like, make them be good. rather than like giving them the ball with great field position because you went for it on fourth and two because you want to be aggressive. Yeah. I think it matters who you play. You want to go for it on fourth and two because you're playing the Chiefs and you're expecting to have to score with them, or you're playing Green Bay and you're expecting to have to score with them, then sure, then do that. So, yeah, I just think that you have to take that into consideration.
Okay, so let's unpack the layers of the Green Bay Packers. So,
okay,
Friday during our show, we're watching Twitter like blow up, and we're like, what is happening? And then we're figuring out Aaron Rodgers had gone on Pat McAfee's show, and, I mean, just like every other tweet that we're looking at on Twitter Friday during the show, it was, you know, something about Aaron Rodgers. And so Aaron Rodgers drama again. Then we know that. So I want you just to touch on that, how you feel about that. Jordan Love, he's in there. Mom is up on the last row of Arrowhead. There's been a lot of talk about that. And Jordan Love, there wasn't much to love. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been it was awful. It wasn't good at all. So there's a lot going on. So
all right. So let me unpack some of it, and maybe it'll be like the McAfee Aaron interview. You can go back and jump in where you feel like you should. For anyone that hasn't listened to the entire thing and wants to have a judgment on it, I would suggest listening to the entire interview so that you have that information, because I think the bits and pieces of it certainly don't tell the whole story, because Aaron had a lot to say about about the entire process, about who knew his situation, who didn't, and why that was. And look, I was asked about it on Wednesday, I guess it would have been, because he had tested positive, and at that point, there's a lot of talk about him, not being vaccinated. You guys have probably heard my comment on, Ryan Tannehill's position, when training camp started. And I would just say this, like, I really don't think, like, I don't think that a player should have to tell, fans or the media or whoever their vaccination status. I don't know how it's any of our business, and I don't know why people are so fired up about whether or not, somebody has been vaccinated or not. Like, especially if, you're not going to be sitting in a room with them or, passing them in the grocery store. I really don't. And so when I was asked about Aaron's decision to not be vaccinated, my answer on Wednesday, before knowing any of what he had, been through, mm-hmm. was, I don't know why it's any of my business. I don't socialize with Aaron, and I'm not around him, and I don't know why it's my business if he gets vaccinated or not. And if he's not, he's going to have to follow the protocols that are in place, for people. And it sounds like, other than the press conferences where he's, more than 6 feet away from people, he's been tested that day, and the people that are in the room have been vaccinated for a virus that he doesn't have. That's the only protocol that he didn't follow. So, in the NFL, which, by the way, is known about this all the way along, and he's the reigning league MVP, they did nothing to correct it going back to week one. Did nothing to correct it. So, I think there's a lot of blame to go around on some of that stuff and some of the things that people are being accused for. Okay, now to get to the football thing, I think it's actually in some ways a helpful situation for the Packers in that they get a chance to evaluate Jordan Love when they otherwise wouldn't get a chance to do so, because they're going to have to make a decision in terms of turning the page on one of the best quarterbacks in the game and handing it over to a guy that didn't look ready the other night, and he didn't look ready. And I thought that if he would have played just okay, there's maybe a chance they win that football game. I thought he played poorly, and because of that, they lost it.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck. Tim, before we get to the Titans, I do want to ask you about the taunting call, the critical call last night. We've had the discussion about taunting, what a player should be aware of in the points of emphasis. That one was somewhat unique in a couple of ways. I haven't seen taunting called for walking over the sideline like he did. Now, he took about 8 steps. I counted them.
Uh-huh.
Now, that's you're kind of getting to that gray area. But what was weird is he didn't get the flag thrown until he clipped the ref coming the other way. And I guess you could argue the ref sort of clipped him. So give me your thought on how they handled that.
Yeah, I think they did it the wrong way. I think they handled it the wrong way, truthfully. Willie, go back to Sunday night. Like, Jalen Ramsey really should have been disqualified. Like,
yes.
That wasn't unnecessary roughness. That was taunting. Like, Jalen Ramsey, like, was standing over, I think it was A.J. Brown.
A.J. Brown,
right?
Yes.
I think it was A.J. Brown. Like, he was going to stand over him and then, like, gives him a shoulder as he's standing over him. Like, that's, and it was after the play. Like, that was not unnecessary roughness. Like, that was taunting, and it was described as such when it was originally called. So, like, yeah, I think they've done a bad job. I think there's been some, like, unintended consequences of trying to make it less of a, you know, show somebody up, you know, environment for some of these players in these situations. You know, we're not privy to, like, what's being said. So, like, look, a guy, you know, walking, you know, taking it, as you say, taking 8 steps over the sideline and, you know, screaming, you know, something like, hey, you know, let's go, or, you know, screaming something like that is probably different than a guy, you know, walking over and screaming something else much more offensive that we can all probably, you know, imagine somebody saying. So I think it's hard. Like, I'm not going to sit here and act like it's not difficult and there should be some very standard way of officiating those situations. I just think that we've probably missed the mark on what they were trying to do, and we probably need to dial it back. And I think we probably, you know, I think there's a way to do it where you tell the players, like, hey, so let's stop doing that, and we'll dial it back, but you guys, like, don't put us in a position where we feel like we gotta, you know, get things under control.
Let's talk Titans. Well, isn't it amazing? This was my first thought about how they beat the Rams was, if you have a front four that can get after the quarterback, it can overcome all kinds of other issues a team might have. It's incredible how well those four guys are playing right now, and that seems to be taking over. It's compensating to a large degree not having maybe the best player in the game.
Yeah, I mean, they end up, their quarterback has thrown an interception that led to points. Did not have a single first down, and they were winning the game at that point 14-3.
Yep. 14-3.
So yeah.
And they had guys in the secondary that nobody on that, if you're watching in California or Idaho or Maine, you probably have never heard of anybody other than maybe Byard in that secondary, if you're really paying attention. And
Keith Byard or Kevin Byard?
Keith Byard is his name on one. What website was it?
It was,
ESPN. On ESPN, they put his name as Keith. No relation to Keith Byers, the
did?
Old Ohio
yeah,
State guy.
On the ESPN
Keith
app.
Byers, not Kevin Byard.
On the ESPN app.
Byard is my favorite.
It says, new NFL power rankings. Keith Byard's interceptions leading something.
Keith Byard.
Well, hey, listen, since we're so I'll answer the question. So, yeah, look, we talk about skill position players, and shoot, Odell Beckham Jr. is dominating the conversation all last week. But the reality is, like, it still is a blocking and tackling game. You do need guys that can score touchdowns. You do need guys that create impact defensive plays. But it, generally speaking, is a, you know, win in the trenches league still, even though we don't always talk about it that way. And it's not all you need, but it still works that way. And I think Jeffrey Simmons and Autry and all those guys, start to prove that a little bit. So, and look, credit to the Titans. If you think about drafting Jeffrey Simmons, you know, with a torn ACL, knowing that there's going to be a kind of developmental aspect to, you know, when he ends up being able to make an impact. Look, I sent in my notes to the Scott Van Pelt Sports Center group throughout the game. I said, Jeffrey Simmons is taking this football game over. And literally, like a series later, Chris Collins was like, Jeffrey Simmons is taking this football game over. And that happened. And then since it came up and, you know, people still don't know his name, I will say this, and I know that there's definitely been some, you know, general buzz about it, but you think back to the play Kevin Byard makes against Patrick Mahomes before the half. You think back, you think about the interception that he makes the other night and runs it back. Like, those aren't just, you know, run-of-the-mill plays. They're not. Like, those are serious, serious plays. And I'll kind of take it a step further. For a guy who I think at this point has maybe have 27 career interceptions or 23 career interceptions. I forget where he is. I think it's 23 career interceptions with
23, yeah.
And he's played 7 years, you know, in change, right? Or this is year seven, or this is...
Yeah, 89 games.
Yeah, okay, so here's the deal. You start getting above 30. You then start, people start talking about having a Hall of Fame career once you get above 30 interceptions. And look, there's a long way to go, but just for like a general sense of what he has done in a short period of time without people nationally really knowing how good of a football player he is, I think he should get some love. Look, there are, look, Myles Garrett and T.J. Watt, and look, there are some really good defensive players that'll be, you know, talked about as, you know, defensive player of the year candidate players. Micah Parsons is going to get some love, not just as defensive rookie of the year, but maybe defensive player of the year. And it would be a crime if Kevin Byard continues to play like he's been playing and does not get some of that recognition.
Tim, I want to ask you as a quarterback, tell me what you're seeing with the Titans. This has been the philosophical thing that's come up. Without Derrick Henry, I heard Todd Downing use the term. I thought it was an interesting one. He said, I don't want to jerk the wheel with the offense. I want to make some quarter turns, and basically saying, I don't want to change the entire offense of what we're trying to do. But do they need to maybe adjust the run-pass ratio a little bit more as they try to find the formula that will be successful for them, or most successful, without Derrick Henry?
Well, in terms of that, I really don't think that guys, play callers, say, all right, we've got to call, you know, 35 passes and 25 runs today in order for us to win. Like, I really don't think they go into games with that type of, like, a definite ratio, so to speak. You know, I think it's more along the lines of, all right, let's call plays, you know, as the game is, you know, is coming to us and what we need to do. So, you know, I think there's an element with that where if you think about what happened the other night, you know, they're having a hard time protecting Stafford. It ends up being, you know, 14-3 without getting a first down. Like, you do probably call the game a little bit differently under those circumstances. So I actually like the idea of, hey, we're not going to change who we are in terms of our identity, you know, completely immediately overnight, but we do need to maybe identify what we are best at doing now, right? So we before were best at, you know, running the running back and doing that and wearing people down. Well, now maybe our best thing is something else. We need to identify that. And rather than throwing, you know, 20 new things onto our menu on our call sheet and figure out what we're good at, like, let's take it slow. Let's figure it out. And by the way, like, let's also believe in our system and in our process of what we do. Like, yes, it's players more than plays, but, like, I'll say this, guys. Like, I thought Foreman looked good the other night. Like, I thought that he ran the ball really well. And, yeah, and so there's part of it for me. It's like, let's give the kid a chance. Like, let's find out, you know, how he can do that. And, look, he's not going to be, you know, Derrick Henry. But, like, let's supplement him in short yard situations with a guy that, you know, throughout his career has been a really good short yard runner in Peterson. So, look, I think the jerk the wheel, you know, kind of analogy is a great one. And I think you need to figure out kind of what your next move is based on what you feel like you can be really good at doing.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst. A.J. Brown was targeted 11 times, only had 5 catches, but we saw the drops. So how concerned are you about some of the key drops that he has had, not only in this game, but, I mean, this has been a thing that we've seen for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a hard thing with guys that are like him, right? And so, like, you go back to Terrell Owens or, you know, you just even look at Odell Beckham. Like, you know, I mean, just drops. Like, they hurt. But at the same time, when you have a player that's he's a scorer for you. You know, he's the guy that gets the ball into the end zone. You kind of have to figure out a way to live with it and minimize it and find ways to, you know, help him, you know, not have kind of the lapses in concentration, because that's really all they are. I would say this in terms of the passing game and the thing that I felt like, and I probably think is, you know, where there's areas for growth. I feel like there's a lot of quick game, perimeter stuff to allow for some run after the catch, you know, type things. And I just don't know that that's really what Titans receivers are good at doing. Right? Like, think of the bubble screen that was thrown on the perimeter. I forget who they threw it to, but, like, you know, it was thrown on the perimeter, you know, and then they just don't do a good job of blocking it on the perimeter. And so then the receiver gets sawed down behind the line of scrimmage. And, like, I just don't think that that's their strength. Whereas I think some teams are really good at running, you know, those perimeter receiver screen type stuff, all that stuff, like, within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. And I think based on the size and strength of the Titans receivers, you know, I think you want to get them running. And you want to get them running down the field as much as you can. And so if I were to say, Chase, like, where I feel like, you know, they should evolve a little bit more in the passing game, and will that help the receivers, you know, and drops and things like that, I think it's letting them run down the field some to scare people with their speed, but also use their physicality to you know, have in-breaking routes and things like that.
All right, I'm going to ask you about some other teams. I'm going to start with the Patriots. I've been saying the last couple weeks that I think that they're better than maybe their record shows. They beat up on the Panthers. They're the 7th seed if the playoffs started today, 5-4, 2nd in the AFC East. What do you think about New England?
Yeah, I think that they're getting better. The quarterbacks played great. My concern with them is, I don't think they have a great supporting cast around the quarterback. And so I think that he's been great. He's been almost perfect at times, certain games. But I also think that, like, that's an ascending team from the standpoint of, if you trust how they're coached, which I do, and I think they've got good coaches. So, look, that'll be a team, you know, that, like I said, you know, probably don't win their division. And so don't win their division, but they get in. And if the quarterback plays really well, and if, you know, they can start to kind of get guys around the quarterback to play a little bit better, then yeah, like that would be a dangerous team to see.
Do you think that, and we'll see what happens now that Odell Beckham is gone, but do you think that Cleveland is getting it figured out, getting healthy, or is that just the result of Cincinnati coming back down to earth?
I think Cincinnati's a really good team. I think that the Cleveland secondary played amazing this past week. I mean, look at Ja'Marr Chase has been running through the NFL, and they did an amazing job on him, and they did an amazing job in general because they're getting healthier in that secondary in Cleveland. And then I would just say this. I think Baker completed balls to 8 different guys in that football game. He looked like he had knees about him. You know, they weren't forcing it to anybody in particular. I think Romo was on that game. I thought he made a really good point in that, you know, sometimes when you got a guy you feel like you've got to get the football to, and you have a guy that's a route runner that puts a little more, you know, jazz into his routes, you kind of hang on him a little bit longer than maybe you should, and it kind of disrupts your timing on other things. I think there's an element of that that can be really true with what we saw of his time in Cleveland. I feel like Baker is playing more free and more decisive. I think it ends up being a better thing for them in the long run in Cleveland. So, yeah, I think Cleveland's a good team. And I think Baker looked healthier as well. I know he's not going to be 100%, but he looked like, a little bit more removed from that shoulder injury, that he was doing better.
Real quick, Cowboys, concerned or just one game?
I think just one game. I mean, that was really bad and ugly, and it'd be hard to recover from it. But yeah, I think it's just one game.
How do you explain no Kyler Murray, DeAndre Hopkins, AJ Green, Arizona smashes San Francisco?
Well, San Francisco's struggling like that. That's a huge part of it. I mean, really struggling. But I'll also say this: they have depth in Arizona, and there were a lot of people really excited about the Colt McCoy signing. And, I think for a couple reasons. One, I think there's a knowledge of, kind of what they were doing offensively. And he played really well. He was 20 for 26 or something. I mean, he had 21 for 28, something like that. He had an amazing day. Look, quarterback's going to be that efficient, then you're going to have a chance. And then, obviously, they created a turnover early in that football game as well. Miles Murphy punched one out of Kittle's, hands early in the football game. So, yeah, Arizona's a pretty good team. A lot of depth.
No doubt about it. Good stuff. As always, thanks for the visit. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, cool. See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck joins us every week on the program, and we do appreciate that. And, he's brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue. So thanks for doing
good.
That. It was really good. We hit on a lot of things.
Good stuff on Keith Byard.
We'll continue that stuff. Byard, too. I love that one. Still, years later, still calling him Byard. We'll come back. We'll continue the discussion on the other side. But I want to talk to you about our friends at Curation CBD. You hear me talk about them every day. They present the show. We appreciate them being a part of our show. And if you're like me and you have aches and pains all over your body, because that tends to happen as we get older, right? It gets a little bit tougher to get out of bed in the morning. Well, you're looking for that solution, like me, to feel better? Well, I've got it. It's Curation CBD. Curation means healing, and that right there says a lot. Curation is locally and organically sourced CBD products right here in Middle Tennessee. From seed to final cell, Curation is passionate about providing quality products for everyday use and for pets too. So not only personal use, but also for the pets, because you may have a pet, a dog like myself, that has seizures, has medical conditions. She's been experiencing this for over 3 years, and we've had endless vet visits, change in medications, 12 pills a day, and ultimately, really nothing's ever changed. It's been basically the same thing. But since we've put her on the pet tincture over the last 3+ months, it has changed dramatically. It has been a huge, huge change. It's been a life changer for her and for us. So if you're in the same boat as us, you might want to look into – no, you should look into the pet tincture for your pet that deals with seizures. Order yours now at CurationCompany.com. Curation CBD, curated for life.